is a Bramble Jam podcast.
Hi, I'm Bran, and I...
Did you forget your name there briefly?
I'm over here. I love classic Christmas movies in a general sense.
I'm Dan, and it has never rung more true than today, but I despise Christmas TV movies.
I'm Alonzo, and I tried to warn you about this Christmas TV movie, and this
is the Deck the Hallmark podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week, another full jam-packed week of Deck the Hallmark, where at this present moment, I still don't know what movie we're covering tomorrow.
But you know what? I bet whatever movie we cover tomorrow, there's at least a decent chance you could find it on Philo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because you can. Here's the thing about Philo is they got the Hallmark and the Lifetime, the BET, the VH1, all that stuff. But you can also search...
They just have random stuff.
On-demand movies with no commercials that you can watch,
just too. Random.
And I also, another thing to brag about Philo, they won't have the movie we're covering today.
Yeah, that's another plus. That's another big plus.
Rest assured.
For them, yes, for sure. It won't clog up anybody's, RAM.
I don't think anyone's asked. No one's asked Philo for The Gathering 2 from 1979.
It's our fault. At the end of the day, Alonzo introduces us last week on his birthday
to a delightful flick.
Minted classic. I didn't know this till afterwards, but it is the TV Christmas movie. It's the kind of the standard by which all others are based, not just for Alonzo, but in general. And we were like, man, give me more. This is the stuff right here. A sequel? Sign me up. Oh, boy.
We did sign up, and here we are.
We're
going to talk about it. But not before we talk about this. Guys, how was your weekend?
Oh, my gosh. it was great, Graham.
Yeah?
My kid lost his first tooth.
Oh.
And that's awesome, but I have twins, and one of them didn't. So
he's just punching himself in the mouth now?
He was not happy
because
I didn't tell him about the tooth fairy. That's ridiculous. But I said, if you put your tooth on your pillow, it will turn into money. and so
science.
Sure enough, he woke up and his pillow was money. And his brother was not thrilled by
his loophole plight. There is to just sleep under your pillow because all of your teeth are then under the pillow.
That's right.
And because of science,
it has to be a tooth that's free.
Okay. Did you walk this through with him? Because I think these are important logistics. These are the logistics that matter.
The reason I didn't do the tooth fairy is not because I think I don't tell my kids Santa's not real in my house. I know that sounds terrible. The tooth
but
fairy,
he is real everywhere else. Everybody,
whatever you say,
please.
But the reason I didn't do Tooth Fairy was it was starting to scare him. He had heard it from relatives and stuff. Like, somebody's coming in my bedroom.
A home invader is here to ruin your discarded body parts.
Just show him the Tooth Fairy with Vin Diesel.
And we're good to go.
He won't be scared at all.
But I didn't mention it to him. And then we put him to sleep. And I leave and I hear him go, Dad, Dad. And I walk in there and he goes, you can have my tooth. And I was like, buddy, you got to keep your tooth under your pillow. And he goes, no, I don't want anybody to come and get my tooth. And I said, that's fine, but your tooth is, nobody's going to come in. Your tooth's magically going to turn into money.
This is blowing my mind.
And
the amount of times you have just berated people because of Santa, and you have the gall to be like, your butt is going to magically turn into money.
No stranger
was. Your pillow has the power. Yeah.
But it did, for him, it magically turned into money.
Gosh.
It did. Oh, no stranger came in his room. He was worried about strangers coming in his room. No stranger came in his room. That's what counts. But my other son is not happy, and that was made for a fun weekend. But that was actually two weekends ago. I don't know what happened this weekend because we haven't been there yet.
Well, I've just been living my whole life waiting to have Bran ask me how my weekend was. So I'm so thrilled about that. I don't even have an answer for that question.
He did it.
You did. You were able. You had your first big premiere back in the theaters.
I went back to the movies. Yeah, I mean, not a premiere, but it was a press screening.
I'm sorry.
You know, there's a
John Krasinski was not there.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. There was no red carpet. But yeah, it was, I got to see A Quiet Place Part Two. And then 4 hours later, I had to go to another part of LA and see Fast Nine, which was exciting.
Yeah.
So, but in both cases, it was like masks on, two seats between everybody. And,
did you get concessions, Alonzo?
Well, at the Quiet Place Part Two, and I think the AMC theater where they did it wasn't open to the public yet. So it was closed. You couldn't get any.
Oh, wow.
Then I went to the one in Burbank, which was open, and the concession stand was open. So I had a soda and some Twizzlers and was doing this under the mask straw thing the whole nine yards. I'll tell you, I have been eating so well for 14 months. Like Dave has had me, like we have like a big meat meal once a week. But beyond that, it's vegetarian. It's like we were really a lot of, you know, healthy stuff. So what do I do my first night out?
Twizzlers.
I go to Buffalo Wild Wings and then I have Twizzlers and a soda, and all night my body's just like, you need more water. That's I don't know what the heck you just put in me, but this is not good.
You need to go back home where you belong.
Yeah, the Buffalo Wild Wings, I don't know when that's ever a good choice. No, and I've been numerous times. My first trip back to the theater, I had large soda Red Vines. It happened. There was no doubt about it.
I was on vacation and there was only an AMC theater close, and they only had a 4 o'clock and a 7 o'clock showing. And I don't know if that's universal to the AMCs, if they're only
during
doing the
week,
two showings.
During the week, they're only doing the two showings. The middle of the day. Yeah. That's it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
What a time.
We'll get back to it eventually.
Sure. All right. Well, Gathering Part Two.
We've tried our best to avoid it as long as possible. I can do more with loose tooth.
Yeah.
Stuff
no, dude. Yeah, keep going. Go for it. Do you have any tips for how to... If I want some magic money, like how to get rid of
loose tooth that's unencumbered. It's not attached to you under
first
your pillow.
You tie a string to the doorknob.
Turns into money. That's right.
Unencumbered. That's right. That's all I'm live. All right. Gathering Part Two originally aired on December 17th, 1979. People from around the country that loved Gathering One sat their families down in front of the screen the week before Christmas and said, this will get us in the spirit. And it went a little something like this. It is two Christmases after the last one, and Adam has passed away. The family is all at this at the company. They're honoring Adam's legacy. They got this pretty, and I will say, a pretty dope painting. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was a pretty dope painting. Yeah. After this guy walks in, and it really upsets the family. They're like, what's he doing here? Turns out Kate is now dating this fella. His name is Victor Wainwright, and if that's not enough reason to hate him, it turns out that he, after Adam passed away, approached Kate and tried to get her to sell the company. And now the whole family is like, oh, he's just dating you to try to convince you to sell the company. Everyone thinks he's a big sketchball. So what they decide to do is, we're going to all get back together for Christmas time. We're going to keep an eye on Mom. We're going to see what's really going on here with old Wainwright. And we'll get to the bottom of this. Now, there's also some other drama going on. We do see a handful of flashbacks that show, like, the funeral, that show Kate meeting Wainwright, all this stuff. And then we do get a few different storylines within the family. Of one of Kate's daughters is considering an abortion, ultimately decides to keep the baby. Bud and one of the other brothers, I only know Bud's name, I don't know what you want. They're mad at each other, but it just takes one nice afternoon on the dock with some water, a sponge fight. And they're all back together. They have a big family fireworks show once again. I would say a little bit of underwhelming compared to the last one, but you know, what can you do? You can only do so many fireworks shows. And then the movie wraps up with Wainwright showing up for New Year's Eve, and the family seems to have finally come around to him. They wish each other a happy New Year, and they drink to it. And that, my friends, was The Gathering Part Two.
We did it.
We did.
And I will say this, as we were wrapping up there, I thought for sure you had missed a lot of details, but... Not by my recollection.
I didn't miss much.
I don't think you did miss much.
Yeah, I don't think I did.
The sourpuss kid who tries to convince his sister that there's no Santa.
Yeah.
Who would do such a thing?
Monster.
That's right.
Let me introduce you to magic money. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and
magic
we'll talk about
teeth. The money is not magic. The teeth are magic, Brian. Right. Come on.
Man, I love watching TV so much, but I just have kind of had it with the old way of doing things, Dan.
You mean the new way of doing things, which is all of these different services.
I'm sick of the old way. I'm sick of the new way.
What if there
I'm
was
sick
a third,
of every way.
What if there's a third way.
What do you mean?
Where you could pay less and get more and get an unlimited DVR.
I would say, well, quit lying.
Well, you could get your realities, like your 90 Day Fiancé.
I love that one.
Your Love and Hip Hop. You
love
could get
it.
Your Christmas movies on the Hallmark, the Lifetime.
Please, please. Up.
You could get your prestige drama on the AMC.
Okay.
You could have an unlimited DVR and you could do it for like, well, under $30 a month.
I don't think so.
You can with Philo.
Tell me more.
Philo TV is the place to find all your faves in one spot for the least amount of money possible. And with an unlimited DVR, it's a win-win-win. It's a third way of doing things.
I'll do it, but sweeten the pot, please.
25% off for 2 months, and I forgot about kids programming. Philo is literally for everyone.
Wow, I love it.
From kids from 1 to 92. For kids from whatever.
You got it.
If you're a person, Philo is for you. You can go to philo.tv/DTH. You're going to get 25% off your next 2 months. philo.tv/DTH. You won't regret it.
Okay. Well, we're back. We're talking Gathering 2, 1979. I don't know if this one aired on ABC or not. I could not find that information, but I imagine.
I believe it did. Yes.
Okay. ABC doubled down. They doubled down on the Gathering. Well, let's break it down. I imagine you, by our tones and general whimsy, you can tell our hot takes, but let's put it in word form. I'm going to start with my good friend Alonzo. Alonzo, what did you think of Gathering 2? You had seen it before. You did warn us. So how did it compare to your recollection of the movie?
I didn't watch it in its original airing, and maybe I think because I'd read the reviews that it was just not nearly as good as the first one. But I did watch it when I was doing the Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, because the first Warner Archive DVD they put out of The Gathering was a 2-disc set, and they threw in Gathering Part 2 for no extra. I was like, all right, fine, I'll watch it. And yeah, it's I was disappointed with it then. I'm disappointed with it now. Most of the cast is back except for Gregory Harrison of the characters that lived, but you know, you don't have the same screenwriter, you don't have Randall Kleiser directing, and it feels very kind of hacky. And the first one feels like a movie, and this feels like a TV movie. And you know, I think they really, a lot of the sort of character issues are contrived. They desperately try to remind you of what you liked in the first one. They do the Not by Kipling poem again. They do the fireworks again. And it, you know, they even have like these weird flashbacks where Ed Asner's character is sort of off screen and you don't see him, but they're talking to him. It's just like, I never cared about the new problems in this movie, except for the ones that directly reference the first movie. So beyond that, this just felt kind of desperate than a cash grab.
Bring it home, Bran.
This movie to me felt less like a made-for-TV movie and more like a paint drying or something like that. And I will just say it is a bold decision. This isn't necessarily a decision that I would make if I was in the writer's room, but when we're thinking about making a sequel to a beloved Christmas movie, when you're thinking about storylines for the sequel, like the abortion storyline would have been down on the list for me personally.
It was 1979. This was hot stuff.
It's Christmas, man. I don't know. It caught me very off guard. I didn't see it coming. I will say that. So kudos for the surprise, not kudos for the movie, unfortunately. Big bummer for Bran, seeing as how much I really adored last week's movie. But what can you do, Dan?
Not since Super Babies : Baby Geniuses 2 has a sequel summited such peaks of awfulness as we see in The Gathering Part 2. And in the first movie, Ed Asner bears his soul as a dying dad who wants to make right. And in the second movie, people dial rotary telephones for 15 straight seconds. to say this is a drop in quality is an understatement of epic proportions. This thing is bad, bad. There are 7 minutes of music playing while cars are driving in this movie. It is like
at minimum
what Zack Snyder is to slow motion, The Gathering Part 2 is to music and cars driving. This movie sucks big time. It is terrible. Give me some Hallmark. Where are my Alicia Witt movies at? Where's that Pickler when you need her? Woof! This is bad, guys. It's a bad movie. I don't know what you want from me. It was everything I had to just keep my eyes on the screen. It was very, very bad.
I do think it's the first time that I will certify a movie as a dumpster fire. Like
done.
Wow.
Dumpster fire. But the thing is, for Brand, this movie has better performances than some Hallmark movies, but it is as boring as boring gets. Like, there's just not a lot.
You brought up Christmas in Montana as we were watching this. And I think it's right there.
Wow. Yeah. This movie, the first 10 or 15 minutes, I was sitting there thinking, what is this movie even about?
That's right. It's not a Christmas movie. It's barely. It's just, it's a mess. It is an absolute mess out there. Whew.
Like, boy. And it's not even like a bad premise necessarily. Like, oh, the dad died, mom's moving on. Like, that's a fine starting jumping off point. But like, it just does not.
Meanders. It just meanders. Yeah, it doesn't have stuff for all these people to do, and it's longer than the first one. Like, how dare you? Are you kidding me?
They really needed the time.
They needed the time. Yeah.
Tell this deep story.
Let's get to the feels. Okay. Did we have any feels? Did we find any? Alonzo.
I had a couple. Veronica Hamill, who plays the wife of the son whose name we can never remember, Tom's wife, Helen, they are Christmas shopping when he informs her that he's about to upheave all of their holiday plans because they need to go home because of, you know, mom's new boyfriend. And the way that she's like, all right, well, yes, I will make this trip for you. And we're also going to cancel all these dinners. And you are buying me a new set of luggage right now. And I thought that was a really funny scene. I thought she played it really well. And then before it gets completely undone by the stupid sponge fight, I thought that Tom's speech to Bud about the father's decision and why he didn't say anything and how in retrospect obviously doesn't matter what he thought, that he obviously really harmed Bud because Bud and his family went back to Canada thinking dad was going to live forever, you know. I thought that was a good speech as well.
I like to think that the sponge fight is like the catalyst of like snowball fights in Hallmark movies. Like Hallmark watched that and was like, what if we did that but with snowballs? And
what
we
if put they in every flower movie? At each other?
Yeah, I like that. That's good. For me, man, like I was disappointed because I got so many like true Christmas feels in the first one. Mm. And in this one, I went, you know, 20 minutes at a time forgetting that it was a Christmas movie at all. Like it lacked so much Christmas spirit and joy that it just kind of bummed me out. So I got bummed out feels. Yeah, I mean, I think the brothers reconnecting towards the end was the closest thing I got.
And again, because that's a holdover from the first movie. Yeah, and yeah, so yeah, we're invested in that stuff and not in any of the new stuff.
Yeah. 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 So that's it for me, Dan.
I would agree with Alonzo on the speech the brother gives to the other brother. The speech that the brother gives to Bud, you know, the cleaning of the boat, what's going on, the water fight, what's going on. But when there's no right answer. Like when your dad is terminal and he doesn't want to let you know, there's no right answer in that situation. Like either you tell everyone and you make the dad upset because now he's treated like an invalid when he wants just to be remembered as the guy, you know, a better version of who he was, or you don't say anything and then the siblings get mad at you. And the speech unpacks that really well. Like it unpacks the idea of, I'm sorry that you feel like I betrayed you. However, don't think it was any easier on me. And so though, that was the only authentic moment I feel like in this movie. The rest of it is very hacky, as you said. That one moment did ring true for me, and I did actually, like, I could keep my eyes on the screen, and I was like, yeah, this makes sense. So, yeah, I was in for that. That moment, I feel like, could have happened in a longer version of the first movie, though, where we get to see all the way through the death and funeral of the thing.
True. So, yeah. Like, don't make a sequel. Just make the other one 20 minutes longer.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
I will say, I did get a car phone feel. I forgot. Like, there was a moment where car phones meant you were like a real, you were a real high roller, big city deal maker.
You were doing it.
He was, yeah. I loved it. Let's tell you, and I mean, obviously, that guy wants to buy the company. Like, if you have a phone, like, you want to buy the company.
Wainwright,
you're up to no good. You're up to no good.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with the wait, what's in the what, the ABCs here on Dyke Talbert. Boy, oh boy, we're back. Yeah. We're talking about is it just Gathering, or is it The Gathering?
The Gathering, Part 2.
And we're going to get to the wait, what's. I'm going to start with Alonzo. Alonzo, what you got?
Well, you know, again, this movie, not nearly Christmassy enough and finding weird ways to fill its running time. But you'd think a thing they could have actually dwelled on a little is when Wainwright comes to Christmas dinner and it's awkward and nobody knows what to do and everybody's like polite but rude, you know. What they do is he shows up, he goes through the gauntlet of kids who are all sort of like in various levels of indifference toward him. And then you cut to Kate walking him back to his car and kind of apologizing for it. And I'm like, wait, did he turn around and leave, or did we just skip Christmas? And it turns out we just skipped Christmas.
We skipped Christmas. It's not important. It's a minor detail, for sure.
So that seemed like an odd filmmaking choice. I could have lived without Kate telling her pregnant daughter, who is considering an abortion, that she has no right not to tell the father. I'm going to chalk that up to 1979 old lady and just like go with
that.
Seems
like a conversation we're not going to get into, but yeah, it did ring weird here in 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't age particularly well. So yeah, those were my main ones.
Yeah, I don't have a ton, either. One is just, the kiss between Wainwright and Kate. Mm. It's up there as one of the most uncomfortable kisses I've ever seen. I don't know if that guy's just never kissed anyone before. It did strike me as his first kiss ever on screen. I don't know. It was a weird bit. It was very uncomfortable. I know part of it was she was uncomfortable. So it played well. But I felt like he was really trying to give it his all, and it just was a weird. I was very uncomfortable there.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do.
I was too. No, I looked. We were both kind of like, trying to shed like we're just like
make it stop.
I wrote down the amount of driving in this movie is absurd. Like, is, just if you do decide to watch this movie, please have a stopwatch ready and just every time someone's driving and just report back.
And not,
we estimated 7 minutes and I think that might be
underestimated. But I'm being honest with you. I'm not talking about driving with a purpose, like a car chase scene or like a conversation, just a camera shot of cars driving and music playing with no, just ambling like a golden retriever out for a long stroll. Like, that is what's happening in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my last one is it did feel to me in this movie that they forgot that their dad was a jerk.
There it is. Thank you.
This entire movie throws that out. And I understand, like, that, you know, you probably remember more fondly in that situation for sure. But there is not one mention of the facts that, I mean, Kate mentions it once, that she lost her husband twice, once when he left and once when he died.
Well, but Tom talks about how they were stubbornly at loggerheads and talking about his relationship with Bud, but that's about it.
They talk about this guy like he was Adam Thornton, patron saint of abusive fathers.
Bud is completely a different person in this movie. Like, in the first one, he's up there working on roofs, and it's I don't know. It was a weird, like,
The thing that bothers me about that is that the worst thing I can say about this movie is it makes the first one worse. Because what's great about the first one is that this is a guy, Adam Thornton is a character that Ed Asner plays so perfectly, who's not trying to win a Best Father award. Right. He's just trying to get back to good. Before he dies, he's not trying to bring everybody home so they can remember how awesome he was. He's trying to bring everybody back so he can apologize, and so the last memory of him can be a good one instead of a terrible one. And then in this movie, they talk about this guy like he was the father of the year every year. Yeah. And I just, that's not the case. Like, there should be a little bit more admiration for a father that did wrong, swallowing his pride, than a revelry in who this guy was his whole life, because that was not who he was his whole life. And that was a huge weight what to me. Like, it didn't make any sense. It makes the first movie, it takes some of that sheen off the first movie to me.
Yeah.
You got more?
Nope, that's it.
I got more. There's a lot of this movie that very closely resembles a horror movie in how it's shot and scored. Maureen Stapleton, and maybe I just didn't remember it from the 1977 one, but the way that she like says her lines, she talks like it's a kind of like a haunted house movie, and then the music comes in, and I think it's supposed to be make you feel sad, but it's just eerie, like for no reason. It's eerie to me, like it felt that way anyway. The two brothers scene that was so great. Boy, Bud is washing the heck out of that boat. I got to be honest. He has scrubbed that window clean no less than 8 times. Like, it's just the same spot. He's just getting over and over. Like, move around, buddy. Like, you can act a little bit. It's okay. Like, he has scrubbed that one side clean as a whistle. The fireworks display, this is what was interesting to me. It didn't seem as impressive, but the setup on the ground was more elaborate. So there's more stations, it's bigger, and it took them 15 seconds to set up, but yet we got less out of it somehow. Like,
it was much more
it's
of
a metaphor
just,
for the whole movie.
That's right. Yeah.
It was much more of just like the flames that just kind of sizzle.
Yeah.
And less like, wow.
But like in the first one, it's like, how did they set up 4 Roman candle stations? And this one, there's like 10 stations.
And they're all just kind of like,
they've been out there like 10 jazz hands.
And then
lastly, we saved this for the end, and I'm hoping Alonzo didn't catch it so we can quiz him. This movie is historic, and it does hold a place that hopefully will make our second edition of I'll Be Home for Christmas movies coming out September 28th. They end this film by saying Happy New Year's to each other quite a few times.
Oh, no, I didn't notice.
Alonzo, how many times does this family say Happy New Year's in a row?
Is it more or less than in Reunited at Christmas?
It's more.
Oh, wow. Okay, then I'll say 14?
13 times.
Wow.
They say Happy New Year's to each other 13 times before the credits roll.
And it does make you wonder if Reunited with Christmas was like...
Whoever's directing the
paying
movie
homage to,
is like, this is what we'll do.
Two.
It's the Gathering Part 2. Like, everybody watches it and makes fun of it, and they're like, you don't know your history. If you had watched the Gathering Part 2, you'd know what I was going
well,
for.
Sir or madam.
Touche.
I sense a film and a movie happening here.
A tip of the cap to you. That's right. If you make me watch those two movies again,
friendship
over. That's it. That is.
Yeah, it's worth noting the first Gathering nominated for 5 Emmys and won 1 for like outstanding special, and the Gathering Part 2 is nominated for Goose Egg.
Nothing. 13 Happy New Year's in the movie. You just can't make that up.
When it started happening, we both sat up a little bit.
I was not even watching the movie anymore. Like, I was on my computer and I looked up at Brandon.
Happy New Year's.
I looked up at Brandon and I went, 7, 8, 9? And I counted 10 and I said, we got to run it back, man. I think it could break the record. And we ran it back and there was 13.
Oh, man.
Amazing. It was a beautiful
moment. This is why y'all do what you do.
This is why we do what we do. That's
a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
It's time for What the ABC is, as far as show. We wonder what could have been maybe happening that if there was a gathering.
I wonder a lot of what could have been.
If there was a gathering 3, maybe some answers we'd get. Alonzo, are you wondering anything?
Well, my main thing is these people all need therapy. Yeah. You know, the kids need therapy to like butt out of their mother's life. The mother needs therapy to tell the kids to butt out of her life. So yeah, they all feel like they really need to work on themselves a little bit here. The other big question that I had really was, is Thornton Industries ripe for takeover or not?
Yeah.
Because Tom and Bruce Davison have this whole conversation about, oh, I guess we're vulnerable to takeover. I'm like, maybe y'all should do something about that, yep. You know, but it just kind of gets dropped. And it's like, I really want to know how Thornton Industries comes out of all this.
And Bud works there, right? What does Bud
do?
Bud
doesn't he's got the woodworking.
He's a woodworking. Yeah.
But he was
the son-in-law is the guy that started there at the end of the gathering.
72
so what's I guess my question just is, yes, is just Bud like,
it's Christmas Day. Let me give him, how about today, tomorrow, and the next day? And I think we'll be good.
Well, we're closed all week. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. They'll get it. I'll leave a note on the door.
mine is just Bud then. Like, Bud agreed to, he came home, he left Canada, came back, and it just seems like his woodworking business is just exploding, and he doesn't want it at all. Like, so what's going to happen? Like, Bud still seems like he is in quite the, I don't know, he's going through quite the internal turmoil, like not knowing what to do with this thriving woodworking company that apparently he didn't want in the first place.
Maybe take on an apprentice? Perhaps?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I like it.
Yeah. That's what I want to know. I want to know what's Bud.
I was confused. The daughter who's pregnant, the father Peggy. Of the baby, Peggy, yeah, the father of the baby, they have this conversation, and the writing that makes sense there to me is like, let's get back together, let's get married, and we'll raise this child, you know, together. And they allude to the fact that he proposes again, but the thing that I'm hung up on is his suggestion to her, to Peggy, is, you carry the baby to term, have the baby, and then I will take the baby and raise it on my own. That was what was in the script. And I understand she's worried about being a professional and her job, but like, what was the point of the father piping up with the suggestion of, you carry the baby for 9 months and then I'll just take the baby? Like,
I think the idea being, as opposed to you having to give up your career to raise it or you giving it up for adoption, I will take over the nitty gritty of, you know, actually raising this kid, and it will still be like our child. We're keeping it between us, I guess. I don't know. All I know is he got off that train wearing a Newsies cap and a Doctor Who scarf, and I'm like, you do not want to raise a child with that guy.
No. It could be dangerous.
He also threw in this line where he was like, and I'll get help, which was like, are you trying to say like
professionals have like children,
a nanny, or am I going to find another one? Like, what was he trying to get? Cause she was very like,
people that work all the time have children. I know the '70s were a different time, but like, wouldn't it make more sense to say, I will help, like, you can keep your job, I will help you raise this kid, but you can still get to see your child. Like, I
think that's implicit. I think basically it's like, look, we're not going to get married, clearly, because we've decided not to go down that path. But if you entrust the raising of the kid to me, you don't have to just either deal with it yourself or, like, you know, send it off into the system and hope for the best, I guess, is what they're going for there.
Man, this movie's just complex. There's layers.
So very.
And somewhere in all those layers is Christmas, I think.
No, there's no Christmas inside. But Happy New Year's 13 is there, times. Boy. Yeah.
Happy New Year's, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week with another one of these, and we'll be back tomorrow with another one of those. And that's the best way I can describe it. Alonzo, give us some parting wisdom, if you don't mind, something that you've been stewing on.
Well, you know, I tell you, I just started watching Pride on FX, and you can also watch it on Hulu. It's a 6-part series starting in the 1950s about sort of the history of LGBT rights in the U.S. And I got to say, I tuned into the 50s show thinking, oh, this is going to be stuff I know. And it was a lot of stuff I didn't know. Huh. So, you know, if you are interested in how we got to where we are now and, you know, what it was like for gay people and trans people even before like Stonewall in the late 60s, this is a really informative show. It's produced by Christine Vachon, who's like a legendary indie producer, and a lot of really great LGBT filmmakers are doing these episodes. So yeah, check it out.
Fantastic.
Great. Dan?
What do you mean?
You want to do it again tomorrow?
I guess, yeah.
I said your name and you said, what do you mean?
I thought you were asking.
What do you mean?
I thought you were asking me to do words of wisdom as well. I'm no. Like, no. I already gave you my money magic tip. No, I'll just back up. No,
I was just going to say,
that's done.
I said your name and you got defensive.
Yeah.
And no, I'm done. I have clocked out.
No.
We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, may we be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmark is a Bramble Jam podcast recorded live in, yeah, that Greenville, South Carolina. Is produced by Brandon Gray. Set decor by Plum Haywood Mall. For more information on all Bramble Jam podcasts, you can go to BrambleJamPodcast.com. For more information on how to listen to Deck the Hallmark ad-free, you can go to BrambleJamPlus.com.